بسم الله الحمد لله والصلاة والسلام على رسول الله الحمد لله نحمده ونستعينه ونستغفره ونعوذ بالله من شرور أنفسنا من سيئات أعمالنا من يهده الله فلا مضل له وما يضلل فلا هادي له أشهد أن لا إله إلا الله وأشهد أن محمدا عبده ورسوله. Welcome to Islam Today. Islam Today is also available on the internet at www.islamtoday.com. Our discussion today is going to be regarding the concept of God in Islam. And this is Yusuf Estes, the National Muslim Chaplain to the Institutionalized Muslims. And we would like very much to have the opportunity for all the Muslims and those who are interested in Islam to have a chance to share this tape. This is why we're making it available, and it is made available without charge, and as well as visiting our website, you can pick up the same information there, and we invite your attention to the following. This is just a little scenario or story about a place and a time, and we hope you enjoy the story and we'll get some benefit from it. Today we're at the University of Misunderstanding and the Institute of Higher Earning in the West. For centuries, atheists have been most pleased when they feel that they have defeated the believers in their rhetoric and pontification. They have used many questions to turn believers away from God and His true message. There are a number of examples of dialogues between so-called scientists and so-called believers. And while sharing the message of Islam in the universities, military bases, and prisons, I like to use a number of these stories in our seminars and lectures to get a point across regarding the beauty of understanding about Allah, God, and Islam. This particular segment is going to be dealing with what they call the problem that science has with God. And this takes place in the University of Higher Earning and Misunderstanding in Yuppieville, California. The two characters that I'll try to portray here are Professor Dr. I.M. Kaffar and the student Aman, and another student who will come in later in the story will be a Muslim. So there's an atheist professor of philosophy, Dr. I.M. Kaffar, and he stands before his class on the first day of the semester, and he looks around the students, and he sees one young man, particularly new to him, and he says, "Young man, tell me, you're new to this class?" He said, "Yes." "Stand up, young man. Tell me, son, is there a God?" The young man said, "Yes, sir." "So, you believe in God?" "Absolutely." "Is your God good?" "Sure, God is good." "Is your God all-powerful? Can your God do anything?" "Yes." "Okay, here's one for you. Suppose there's this sick person over here, and you could cure him, and you could do it. Would you try to help him? You'd try, wouldn't you?" Yes, sir. Yes, sir, I would. "So you're good." "Well, I wouldn't say that." "Why wouldn't you say that? You'd help a sick or a wounded person, somebody's hurt, if you could, wouldn't you? In fact, most of us, we'd do that, wouldn't we?" "Of course we would." Well, yes, sir. I suppose anybody would." "Anyone? Okay. So what about your God? He's all-powerful and able to do everything?" "Yes, sir." "And your God is good, right?" "Well, yes." "So your God could help the people? The sick people? The dying people?" He could. I mean, yes. "Your God could relieve suffering from these people? He could take away their pain?" No answer. "He doesn't do it, does he, son?" No answer. "Listen, I'm going to tell you something. I had a brother. He believed in his God, and he prayed to his God, but he still died of cancer, even though he prayed, and even he asked his God to heal him. So my question is, how good is this God that you're talking about?" "Can you answer that?" No answer. Then the professor acts as though he's being sympathetic. "You can't, can you?" Then he takes a drink of water from a glass on his desk. He gives the student time to relax. After all, in philosophy 101, you have to go easy on the new ones. "Let's start again, young man. Now I'll ask you again. Is there a God?" "Yes, sir."
Okay. Is there a Satan?
Yes, sir.
Is God good?
Yes.
Is Satan good?
No, sir.
Where did Satan come from? Who made Satan?
Well, God, but see, first, he was an angel, and then something went wrong, and...
Okay, fine. So God made Satan, didn't he?
Professor runs his fingers through his hair, and he turns toward the other students in the class and starts laughing.
I think we're going to have a lot of fun this semester, ladies and gentlemen.
Then he turns back to the student.
Tell me, son, is there evil in the world?
Yes, sir.
Evil's everywhere, isn't it?
Yes, sir.
Did God make everything?
Yes.
Well, then, who created evil? Is there sickness? Is there immorality? Is there hatred? Is there ugliness? All the terrible things that exist in the world, do they exist?
Yes, sir.
Who created them? Who created them? Tell me, please.
The professor moves in close to the student, gets right up in his face, and then in a quiet voice he said, "Did your God create all this evil, son?" The student, trying to hold steady, tries to stare back at the professor, but he has to look down. He doesn't know the answer. What can he say?
Tell me, how is it that his God is good if he created all evil throughout all time? All the hatred, the brutality, the pain, the torture, the death, ugliness, suffering, this is created by what? A God? Your God? All over the world. Is it right or what?
No answer.
You do see the problem, don't you, Sam? You do see there is this problem all over the world. Don't you see it?
Well, let me tell you something. Let me say something to you.
Science has a problem with your God. Do you still believe in your God, son?
Yes. Yes, I do.
How is it that after what I've just explained to you, you still believe in your God?
Sir, it's a matter of faith.
Faith? Faith in what?
Faith in God, sir.
Faith in what God? Where is this God? What is the scientific proof of existence of your God?
Proof? Sir, back home, my mom, she said, my preacher said that
science says you have five senses that you use to identify and observe the world around you. Can you name those five senses for us, son?
Yes, sir. You mean like hearing and seeing and smelling and tasting and feeling?
Very good. Very good. Now we're getting somewhere. I can use my brain and think things through to conclusion by using this scientific process to come to a provable conclusion, right? Tell the class, son, is this right? Do you agree?
Well, yes, sir.
Good. Now, tell us, have you ever heard your God?
Well, no, I didn't hear him, actually.
Have you ever seen your God? Have you?
Well, no, sir. Nobody's seen God. It says in the Bible.
Have you ever felt your God? Tasted your God? Smelled your God? In fact, do you have any sensory perception of your God whatsoever? Answer me, please.
No, sir.
Okay. Have you any testable proof of your God? Do you possess any demonstrable, solid evidence whatsoever to prove any justification for your belief in your God?
Well, no, sir, I don't. But you see,
have you any scientific proof whatsoever to support your position that there is a God?
Well, no, sir, I'm afraid I haven't.
You're afraid? You're afraid you haven't?
Well, yes, sir. I mean, no, sir.
Yet you still believe in him.
Well, yes, sir. Yes, I do.
Now that takes faith. Now the whole class is laughing and giggling. The professor smiles. He looks around. He looks back to the student. And then he moves in for the kill.
Son, it is clear from your own statements that according to the rules of testable, demonstrable protocol, science says your God doesn't exist. What do you say to that one? Well, young man, where's your God now? Sit down, please. And the student sits down, defeated. But now, is God a problem for science? Let's go to Islam Today and see. Remember, you can visit us on the web at www.islamtoday.com and find the answer to these and many questions about the correct belief in Allah, in Islam, and what are the Muslims. Now, to deal with this question today, this is called the answer to the problem science has with God. And again, we're still in the classroom of Professor I.M. Kathar when a young Muslim student stands up, turns, looks to the class, and he says, "Professor, may I address the class?" The professor turns and looks, noticing his beard and his kufi, and he says, "Aha, a Muslim in the vanguard. Come, come, young man. Speak some proper wisdom to our gathering." The Muslim looks around the room. "There are some interesting points that you're making, sir. Now, I've got a question for you."
"You have a question for me?"
"Yes, sir. Is there such a thing as heat?"
"Heat? Of course. Of course there's heat."
"Okay. You're right, sir. Is there such a thing as cold?"
"Son, where are you going with this?"
"Yes, there's such a thing as cold. It's the opposite of heat." "No, sir, there isn't." The professor's grin freezes. The room goes cold. Everybody's staring at the young Muslim standing there. "Sir, according to science, you can have a lot of heat, more heat, superheat, mega heat, white heat, a little heat, or no heat. But according to science, there's no such thing as cold. You can go down to as low as 458 degrees below zero. This is called absolute zero. There is no heat, but you cannot go any colder than that. So according to science, there's no such thing as cold. Otherwise, we would be able to go past 458 degrees below zero. You see, sir, according to science, cold is only a word we use to describe the absence of heat. We cannot measure cold. We can only measure heat. And this is measured in thermal units, because heat is an energy, whereas cold is just the absence of heat. So, according to science, cold doesn't exist. It is just the absence of heat. Sir, may I ask another question?"
"Yes, go ahead."
"Is there such a thing as darkness?"
"Well, now that's a dumb question, son. What is night if it isn't darkness? What are you trying to get at?"
"So you say there is such a thing as darkness, sir?"
"Yes, of course."
"Sir, according to science, you're wrong again."
"What?"
"No, sir. Darkness is not something. It is the absence of something. You can have low light, normal light, bright light, flashing light, but you have no light at all. Then you call this condition darkness, but it is a condition without light. We just use the word darkness to describe that. If this were the case, if the darkness exists, I could ask you to give me a jar of darkness."
"What?"
"Well, sir, stop and think. If I ask you to give me light, you could give me a candle, a match, a flashlight, a lamp. All of these things are light, and you could
turn those on and you could present them. But can you present any darkness?
Sir,
can you give me a jar of darkness?
No answer.
Would you mind telling me what your point is, young man?
Yes, Professor, my point is that your philosophical premise is flawed to start with, so your conclusion is also in error.
The professor starts to go ballistic. Flawed? How dare you?
Sir, may I explain what I mean?
Oh, explain.
Sir, you're working on the premise of duality. For example, you're saying that there is life and then there's death. You mention good and evil as though it comes from two different places and has two different aims or purposes, like a good God and a bad God. You're viewing the concept of God as something finite, something you can measure. Sir, science cannot even explain a thought, yet we know they exist. Science cannot show you electricity. It can only show you what electricity or magnetism can do. But you cannot see them. You cannot taste them. And so on. To view death as the opposite of life is to be ignorant of the fact that death cannot exist as a substantive thing. Death in this life is not the opposite of life. It is merely the end of life as we know it here on earth. So, what if it were to continue in another form after the body dies and the soul continues? So your concept of a human-type God with the same principles, or lack of principles, and goals as a human being would have obviously be impossible. Likewise, any concept of God which puts God in the creation or compares to what has been created or sustained by the same God would naturally be contested by a scientific mind. After all, how could God have his own God? Let me put it in another way. Let us change the terminology a bit and use the proper word, creator, in place of your word, God. This will give us the proper perspective of what we're trying to understand. If you have a creation, then it follows that you have a creator. Isn't that correct, sir? The professor just stares at the Muslim without any comment or movement. Sir, let us take a look around and observe all that exists. Where did everything come from? A piece of floating rock that explodes, and from this great bang, everything comes into a perfect order. Millions upon millions of solar systems and galaxies all operating on orbital systems beyond human imagination are formed out of an accident? How would this be possible? How? You see, this is a theory, but is it based on scientific approach? Or is it just another attempt to deny that there is a supreme creator and a designer of all that exists? Isn't this really a form of denial? Could this be another cover-up to hide the fact that we did not create ourselves and that we do not truly sustain ourselves? In fact, we today, with all our technology, can still not create even one single atom. We cannot create even a molecule of protein. One molecule of protein, and it's impossible for us to create it. We can change things. We can convert things, but we cannot create from nothing. Most important, to deny that we should acknowledge and praise the one who created all this and gave it to us in the first place. Sir, if you deny the creation, then you must deny your own existence. Isn't this also true?
Of course not. Just because we exist doesn't mean we were created.
Oh? Then if we were not created and there's no creation, how do you explain all the wonders of the very thing you claim to teach, science? I'm talking about the miracles in science that occur throughout the universe, sir.
Now, by now, the professor's face is turning a very red color, and he's so angry that he can't talk.
The Muslim continues. Regarding the existence of everything, if you said that everything came out of a solid mass or a huge rock that exploded, still, we'd have to ask the question, where did the rock come from? Or where did the mass come from? How did it get there? Did it make itself? So there must have been something already there. And where did it come from? And who created it? Could you explain, sir, please, for the class, how something comes out of nothing? Of course, the professor doesn't comment. The Muslim continues. Science is not just a study of that which we already have knowledge of or perception of. In fact, Islam is a science in its own right. The methodology of science as we know it today was developed by Muslim scientists of Spain before the Catholic takeover, prior to the Inquisition. 500 years ago. Long before Christopher Columbus sailed to the New World, the Muslims understood and knew that the earth was round, and they already had global shapes to prove it over 1,000 years ago. Now, this was being taught long, long before the Western world ever got into the Dark Ages. So we have to realize that science is something we use to discover what we don't understand, but we never use it as a way to defend what we don't want to believe. Logically, sir, we have to conclude that if something exists, that it came from somewhere. I would give the example that your chair, sir. How did it get here? Did a tree explode and the pieces rain down from the sky to make it into a chair and even put the wheels on it and a fabric? Or how about a car? An automobile. Somebody had to make it. It came from a manufacturer. We don't need to go to the factory to see that it's there to be sure that this is a car. We can drive the car without ever seeing the manufacturer, can't we? How about a painting on the wall? We see a beautiful painting on the wall. Trees, a forest, river, clouds, sunrise. But do we have to see the artist standing there with his paint, brushes, canvas, in order to believe that that is really a painting? Or would we say that, no, because we don't see the artist, we're not going to believe it was created. We're going to say that an art store blew up and all the pieces rained down to make this beautiful picture. No, we wouldn't say that. How about this? If we see deer tracks in the snow, don't we conclude that there must be a deer, that it exists? There's a deer up ahead of us? If we didn't believe that, if we said we have to see the deer to believe that those are deer tracks, then human beings would have starved to death waiting for food to come out and surrender them a long time ago. We wouldn't have any people. How about food in a vending machine? Now, when we go to a vending machine, we see food in there. But we don't deny it's food because we can't see them put it in those little plastic containers. Although, I will admit, some of it doesn't taste much different than the plastic that it's wrapped up in. But then that's another story. At this point, the class is breaking up into laughter. After all, they eat a lot of this type of food in college. Now, sir, as regards your statements of good and evil, you have presented this from only one standpoint, and that is that there are to be considered as a duality. So to say, opposing forces within the creation. This, of course, would be contestable and not acceptable to the science of Islam. Islam demands that there can never be taken into consideration a partner or shareholder in the power and the creation of one God. Islam teaches that although evil does exist, and God must be the originator of it, that it is in fact a part of the purpose of life, and that He, Allah, must also be accomplishing a great work through the agency of this evil which He has caused to exist. What is the purpose, and what is God accomplishing? At this stage, the professor turns and looks at the Muslim as though he would like to know the answer himself. He motions for the Muslim to continue. Sir, Islam teaches us that the purpose of this life is a test on each individual to show each one of us whether or not we would choose good over evil. And this is not the only life. Islam teaches that there is an eternal life after this one, which will be the reward for the actions that the person did here. If a person chose evil over good, he would be punished. But the one who would choose good over evil, he would be rewarded. And this is the basic purpose of life as taught by Islam. In that life, the person will never die. In the next life, he won't ever die. And we don't recycle people back like trash. So this is the only life you would have. And when it's over, it's finished. Additionally, Islam teaches that the rewards for success and punishment for the failure of this test are going to be in the next life. So immediately Islam recognizes evil as evil. It definitely is evil, but it is a creation of Allah. God challenges His creatures, the humans, in a special way. This gives them the choice of submitting to His will for what is good, for what is righteous, and turning away and submitting to lower desires for what is sensual and pleasing in this life. Turning away from that, turning away from the righteousness to the evil, or turning away from the evil to the righteousness. Likewise, Islam does not view suffering in this life in the advent of death as something imperfect or out of tune with nature. Nor does Islam consider material gains and riches as the desirable goal or achievement over the meager possessions or even discomfort. We would all like to pass through this life with the least of suffering, of course. Yet Islam shows us that a certain amount of it will come the way of every human, especially those who look forward to the rewards of the next life. The sacrifices of this life, in fact, help assure the rewards in the next life. While at the same time, the carnal pleasures, the excesses of this life, almost guarantee punishment in the next life. The professor turns and looks at the student. Now, see here. As a philosophical scientist, I do not buy this matter as having anything to do with any choice as a realist. You see, I absolutely do not recognize this concept of God or any other theological factor as being part of the world equation. And certainly I cannot accept that there is a next life or any kind of life other than this life, because God and all the things that you're talking about are not observable.
Sir, I would have thought that the absence of God's moral code in this world is probably one of the most observable phenomena going on. Think about this. Haven't you ever asked yourself the question, why do bad things happen to good people? Newspapers make millions of dollars reporting this every week. Some poor old lady is robbed and attacked. A family is homeless after a fire. A child disappears. Thousands of people are stranded after a disaster. Tornadoes, hurricanes, volcanoes, earthquakes, floods, plagues, wars. And Islam is teaching us that this is all a part of the purpose of life. This is an individual test for each person, so that the individual will see on the day of judgment exactly what he or she sent forward for himself. And by the way, Professor, if humans are evolving, then why are we in our modern so-called civilization today in the same or worse condition than we were thousands of years ago? How have we progressed? Tell me, Professor, do you teach your students that they came from monkeys?
Now, see here, young man, if you're referring to the natural process of evolution, then in this case, of course, I do.
Sir, have you ever observed evolution with your own eyes? Isn't it true that there was a PBS special broadcast in October 1998 that showed the effects of the environment of the weather phenomenon called El Nino on the Galapagos Islands near South America, and it showed that the same birds, the finches, that Darwin had observed in his formulation of the theory of evolution, these same finches proved able to change their characteristics in two or three generations in just a few months from one to another in less than 6 months. Not the millions of years that Darwin had imagined. And, sir, if humans did evolve from monkeys and apes, then how come there still exist monkeys and apes? And where's the connection between them? Are these monkeys and apes that didn't evolve yet? Where's the missing link? Sir, isn't it true there's never been proven any real missing link? Isn't this really a theory? Isn't this really a formula that's been conjured up by certain scientists who have ideas that they're promoting? So, without conclusive evidence and without observable fact, then these are just theories that are unsupported. And according to your own criteria of science, then wouldn't you be considered more not a scientist, but more of a priest or a preacher in the church of evolutionarism?
I will overlook your impudence in the light of our philosophical discussion. But now have you finished?
Well, no, sir, not quite. I do have a few more points. Do you accept that something created all that exists or not?
I believe in what is, and that's science, and that's it.
Science, yes. Sir, you rightly stated science is the study of observed phenomena, but your understanding and representation here of science is flawed.
Science is flawed?
No, sir, excuse me. I said your understanding of science and the representation of it are flawed. By denying the Creator, His creation, His planning, you're denying His purpose of the creation. Have you ever wondered what the purpose of creation is? Have you thought about why you were created in the first place? Islam explains humans were only created to recognize the true Creator of all that exists and then acknowledge His authority by thanking and worshiping Him alone on His terms. That is to say, He would test us.